And welcome once again to Capitol Watch, where we keep an eye on what's happening under the Capitol Dome in Harrisburg for you. I'm your host, David Taylor, President and CEO of the Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me in the studio, your Capitol Watch All-Stars from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association, President and CEO Rebecca Euler. Rebecca, so good to see you.
Good to be here again, David. Thank you.
And my main man, Steve Bloom, Vice President of the Commonwealth Foundation. Steve, thanks for being on the show.
Happy to be here, David. Looking forward to it.
Well, we are, you know, hip deep in the big muddy of the Pennsylvania state budget for 25-26, coming up on the deadline, the time when the new budget is supposed to be done, June 30, but you know, no one is expecting that is going to happen this time around because things are at loggerheads. Is that a fair way to put it, Steve?
Fair way to put it. And, you know, Pennsylvania is a state that is a purple state. It's got a divided state government. The Senate is controlled by a Republican majority. The House is controlled by a Democratic majority. Very thin, but Democrats control it. And there's a Democratic governor. So that's the arena we have to work with, which makes things hard in terms of finding solutions that all three parties can agree to.
Conflicting worldviews.
Conflicting worldviews. And so on the big picture, we're seeing that those are the adversaries as such squaring off over the budget. And why the budget is so particularly important in Pennsylvania, each state legislature runs things its own peculiar way. In Pennsylvania, much of the substantial legislation, the important things that happen, are in one way, shape, or another tied into the budget agreement that is ultimately negotiated between those parties I mentioned. So it's not just about the state budget. It's often about a lot of public policy of various kinds. And so it all boils down to this intense attempt to finish the budget by the constitutionally prescribed deadline of June 30th. We've seen that date slip many times, and the parties say, well, we just can't solve it now, but we're on track, and maybe we'll come back in August or November or December or next March, and we'll get it squared away. We've seen all sorts of variations. But it's always egg on the face of those who have the majorities and the control of things when it seems that they can't competently get a budget done. So there's some leverage there for requiring for the parties themselves to kind of force themselves to get this thing done in a reasonable amount of time so Pennsylvania can move forward.
Right. And of course, it's always more important that it be a good work product than that it be delivered by a certain day, because as you mentioned, Steve, the implications of the many, many choices that are expressed through that budget, reverberate, widely. And so I suppose, there are too many moving pieces right now to try to explain to the listeners exactly how things are working or are going to work out. But the one thing we could do is how should things go? If we had a sensible and responsible process, capital I, capital F, if we had a process like that, what would it look like?
It would look like a balanced state budget, which is required by the Constitution. Mm-hmm. That was operating essentially, it was solvent,
yes.
I guess would be the word I'm looking for.
Yes.
Because what we see now is unfortunately a budget where there's a structural deficit built in.
Yes.
And that happened under the control of Governor Wolf and into the control of Governor Shapiro. And it is now a situation where if something isn't done to correct course, we're going to have to ultimately enact tax increases in the next few years, and very significant ones. A good working system would not create a crisis like that for each budget.
Right.
But now we're facing, because Governor Shapiro put into effect a budget that didn't address the structural deficit, we're now seeing the budget reserves being dwindled, mm-hmm. and we're seeing
Governor wants to dip into the rainy day fund. And that's like the fail-safe. That's the emergency fund.
And there was the government was very flush with money because of the COVID epidemic a few years ago. There was a lot of money flowing to the states, including Pennsylvania from Washington,
mm-hmm. hot off the printing press.
So they could kind of cover up some of these practices that were not favorable to consumers. But now the the time has come where it's clear if we don't get that budget on track and stop reducing the spending, we're going to see a tax increase and the miseries that that's going to cause.
Yeah. And Rebecca, correct me if I'm wrong on this. I want to just sort of sketch this out. So the structural deficit means that mandatory spending is increasing faster than the receipts to the Treasury from the natural growth of the economy.
Right, right. It's essentially living on sort of one-time money over time. So sort of cobbling together pieces of money that aren't going to come back next year.
Yeah. They call it non-recurring revenue.
So the world
that we should want to be solvent, to be stable, would be to have a dynamic where through the natural growth of the economy, that enough revenues are being generated for the Commonwealth to pay for all of our core services, including the mandatory spending, which is the social services programs. Like that's where we should be. That's where a healthy state, that would be the sweet spot. That's where we would operate. One of the dynamics that we have making things difficult is the Medicaid population. And again, Medicaid is a program that was intended for poor people, poor senior citizens, people with disabilities, and poor expectant mothers or mothers with small children. Like that's what Medicaid was meant for. But under the Obama administration and Obamacare, that the federal government essentially bribed the states to enroll people who were not in those three categories. And so you now have able-bodied, working-age people with no dependents who are receiving these benefits. And in fact, that the federal government is funding a coverage for those people at a higher rate than the people for whom the program was intended. And like that's a problem. And it's something that the Trump administration is focused on. And so that may also complicate our budget picture, because what Washington should do is to say, no, we're not funding these people who are ineligible. We're not funding illegal aliens. And so therefore we're not going to send that money to the states.
Well, to give you an idea of what the scope of that specific problem is, 40% of the state's operating expenses is federal money. So that's about $50 billion. But of that, human services makes up 70 cents of every federal dollar.
Wow.
So that's the SNAP and Medicaid is what you're talking about. So 70 cents of every federal dollar is those human services, and that's 40% of state operating expenses.
And it's completely unsustainable. Like if we could just direct benefits to those American citizens who qualify to say that this is for poor senior citizens, that this is for people with disabilities, that this is for poor young mothers or expectant mothers, we could rationalize these expenditures and actually get the amount of money that's going out the door to be a controllable amount. But when you got the spigot all the way open and you're giving this money to people who are able-bodied, of working age with no dependents and no disability, and that you're also allowing benefits to flow to non-citizens, people who aren't even in the country legally, who never paid a dime into these programs, well, obviously there's no way to continue doing that. At some point, you're just going to go bust.
And part of it has an impact, too, on the workers who are available and willing to take jobs that are offered. You've done this, I know, and Rebecca, you've done this. You talk to business owners, and this has been this way now for years, and ask them what their biggest challenges are. Almost always they're going to say it's personnel. We can't find the people to fill these good jobs that we have. And in many cases, they are good jobs with excellent benefits, good hours, jobs that use your mind and your hands and whatever it may be. They can't get the people because many of them have realized that, hey, there's a gravy train here connected with Medicaid. And even as an able-bodied citizen, they can use that as part of their ability to simply not reenter the workforce. It was never designed for that. It was always designed to be a temporary program that would help people get back on their feet, which we all can endorse. And those who were able would go back to work, and those who had a disability or small children or were aged, of course, wouldn't have to. But that's not what we've seen, sadly, and it's got repercussions.
You're listening to Capital Watch. I'm your host, David Taylor from Pennsylvania Manufacturers Association. With me, Rebecca Euler from the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association and Steve Bloom from the Commonwealth Foundation. And Steve, just taking that point one step further, that not only is it a fiscal reality that we can't afford to pay for idleness, but it's also a moral reality that this is not good for people. Like, human beings have agency and have talent and have potential. Human beings were never meant to be kept like house pets or zoo animals. People need the dignity and the sense of purpose and self-worth that comes from work. And so we're not doing anybody any favor to make them dependent, to keep them dependent, and especially when it comes to work requirements for these benefits, it is a necessary thing, because the longer one is dormant, the more one's skills erode, the larger the gap then becomes in their credentials. Like, it would be good for people to even just go to a local charity and work for a couple hours a week, which is the only demand that's really in place for them. So it's not like you got to work 40 hours a week. It's just like, get up off the sofa and go do something useful. So again, that they aren't just wasting away, so that they will have some kind of credential, some kind of skill set, somebody who they can say, call this person who saw me work at the animal shelter or the soup kitchen or wherever, and that person will tell you that I was a good worker. Like, people will need that to be able to move on to the next thing. And if they don't, then they're going to be just stuck where they are. And that's no good for anybody.
Well, I mean, we talked on our last show about the incredible opportunity that the Nippon U.S. Steel deal is bringing to Pennsylvania. Clearly, we're going to have a lot of opportunity for trade jobs, manufacturing jobs, trucking jobs, transportation jobs. All of these things are going to be coming to Pennsylvania, and we need the workforce that's going to be able to sustain the economic development that we're going to have as a part of that deal, and hopefully as the economic activity that it's going to bring to the state. So maybe let's put some resources into job training programs and focusing on reorienting underprivileged folks who are taking advantage of these programs now into those job opportunities that we know we're going to have and employers are going to need them.
Absolutely, yes. The gravitational pull of market demand when we don't have enough workers, like, this should help to elevate wages, to motivate businesses to cast the net wider, and to also to offer, I don't know what to say exactly, like, wraparound services.
Yeah,
everybody's gonna have to level up. People on both sides of that equation, employers and new hires both. But we're gonna need employers to recognize that people who've been outside the workforce, that their financial condition is fragile, that maybe they don't have the social support that somebody else might have, that these are folks who are, you know, one car repair away from having their finances completely fall apart. But at the same time, for those new hires who really grab hold of the opportunity and show what they can do, that the employers who give them a hand up and bring them on board, those will be some of the most loyal employees that they will ever have, because they'll understand what was done for them and that there'll be a deep and abiding gratitude.
And you're absolutely right, David. And we've been talking about a lot of the negative sides of bad budgeting. At Commonwealth Foundation, we have put together a list of 10 of things that would make for a good Pennsylvania state budget as we move into this budget season and this budget negotiation process.
Yeah.
So just real briefly, number one, a good budget would reduce structural deficits to prevent Shapiro's tax hike, which essentially that would cause. A good budget would reserve or preserve the rainy day fund. Mm-hmm. We talked a little bit about that.
Mm-hmm.
A good budget would fund educational choice for needy students. There are students being left behind by our school system that need help right now. A good budget would enact Medicaid work requirements for healthy, childless, working-age adults. We've talked about that extensively. Number five, a good budget would maintain scheduled tax reductions like the phase-out of the CNIT, the corporate net income tax. A good budget would prioritize students over declining districts with excessive reserves. So money follows the child for education rather than propping up schools that are operating with empty rooms and antiquated conditions because they don't have the student population anymore. The seventh point would be that a good budget would extend regulatory relief to all Pennsylvanians. That unleashes our industry. It unleashes the potential we have. A good Pennsylvania budget would block energy tax hikes.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Which would just be crushing and with consumers still fighting off inflation and all the difficulties we've seen over the past few years, the last thing we should be doing is hike energy taxes, although the Shapiro administration has pushed for that at times. A good budget will adopt fiscal reforms to ensure a balanced budget, and a good budget will put mass transit reform before bailouts for failing mass transit systems.
Yeah, and in each one of these instances, and I couldn't possibly agree more, but in each one of these instances, it shows the kind of common sense and focus on results. Don't tell me what your intention is. Show me how you're going to actually make it work. And if things are not working and are dysfunctional or are inadequate, how are you going to fix it? That it makes no sense to just give more and more money to schools that have proficiency rates for reading and math that are close to zero. Like something is wrong, and just throwing, you know, good money after bad, it makes no sense. We have to find things that work. You know, with the mass transit situation, you have, you have entrenched bureaucracies and that you have lots of feather bedding and other things where it's more expensive than it ought to be. And that, you know, if services need to be, restructured or reduced, do it based on the patterns of current usage. Don't just, what did they say, shut down the Washington Monument to protest, a budget stalemate. Pair off the things, clip away the things that are used the least so that you can focus on the structure that upon which people are most dependent.
Like what people would have to do if they're in a retail situation or manufacturing situation. They can't just keep having a shortfall year after year. They've got to take steps. And as you said, these mass transit agencies, in particular SEPTA in the Southeast and the Allegheny County structure out there that they have for mass transportation, there's a lot of trouble there. There's practices that need to really stop, and there needs to be a reform that takes place if they're going to continue to have these taxpayer subsidized mass transit systems.
So, Rebecca, what are your concluding thoughts on all this?
I don't know. I will say I don't think we're going to have a non-time budget. That would be my first thought.
Uh-huh.
There are a lot of issues here. We didn't really even get into some of the proposals the governor has, marijuana legalization for one, taxing games of skill is another. Those are some of the issues on the table, and those are not easy issues to come up with solutions for, and there is not wide agreement on them at all. So I think it's a difficult budget year. I'm sure we're going to end up with a sausage in the end, but that making that sausage is going to take a while, I think.
Well, anyway, you listeners know that we will be here every step of the way, so stay tuned. And unfortunately, that's all the time that we have for this week's program. Steve, where can people go to learn more about you and your group and the work that you do?
They can visit commonwealthfoundation.org.
Wonderful. And Rebecca, where can people learn more about the Pennsylvania Motor Truck Association?
They can find us at pmta.org.
Wonderful. And as ever, you can find me online at pamanufacturers.org. And from Steve and Rebecca and me, thanks for listening, and we will catch you next time on Capital Watch. And now, a town hall commentary from Loman Henry.